Hey, good morning. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Good to have you at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone lines and the email machine and the tweets and the Twitters and all that kind of stuff. Hey, before we begin, a reminder, you're always invited, of course, to be a part of Perspectives via phone or email, preferably. The number, local in Tallahassee, since we're talking local Tallahassee today, 414-1234. If it's long distance, it's 800-926-8809. Email perspectives at WFSU.org. Oh, you know, I'm kind of old enough to remember when nearly every town, no matter how small, had a, you know, nice, vibrant downtown shopping district. Do you remember that? Was that the situation when you were growing up? You know, you'd look over and on one corner you'd see the guy who sells and also fixes shoes. He had a little shop set up, and then right down the street there'd be a bakery that would have like the best sugar cookies and chocolate cake on the planet. And if you needed school supplies, there was a little stationery store. They could fix you right up. And if you wanted to check out the latest spring fashions, just hop on over to Emma's Dress Shop. She had them and was even having a sale. With all that kind of thing, many of us grew up around. So today, it's not quite that way in most of America's downtowns. You even look at downtown Tallahassee, which used to have a whole bunch of local stores. There is now only a handful of them. And so having a wide selection of locally owned and operated retail businesses is kind of gone by the boards. So today it's the malls, the big box stores, and online vendors and all of that. So in response to a big push to try to shop local, and not just from the aspect of helping out local merchants and retailers, although that is a part of it, we wanted to put together a panel with the help of our good pal Joe Berg that would talk to some of the other things that are involved with shopping local, how it becomes such a synergistic kind of thing where everyone can benefit, regardless of whether or not you are the local merchant, and what it does in bringing communities together in a more cohesive fashion. Kind of big stuff, huh? But we want to get your take on it, too. So, again, we invite your comment and questions and all of that here on Perspectives today. So let's go around the table, introduce everyone. We mentioned Joe Berg, so let's start with him. Independent business advocacy kind of guy, president of Locally Owned Tallahassee, coalition of local businesses that advocates for greater support of community enterprise. And he's also the publisher of Capital City Villager. You may get that online. That keeps you up with all the things that are cooking here in the capital city. And also originally came from Maryland, too, you said, Joe. What town in Maryland?
Baltimore, born and raised.
Balmer, huh?
Balmer.
Balmer boy.
Up near down in Baltimore, hon.
Oh, well, they have to go down Sparrow's Point there.
Sparrow's Point.
Yeah. Anyway, and thank you for your help in putting this together,
thank
Joe.
Thank you so much for having this show, Tom.
Okay, we're going to go around here. I'm hungry, so I'm going to talk here with Reuben Fields. He's the owner and operator of the Miccosukee Root Cellar, a local restaurant that features healthy foods that come from local farms and providers, including Turkey Hill Farms. You may know of that. It's owned by Reuben's family, and he worked on that for many, many years. And let's see, his family formerly owned the Honey Tree, a natural food store. You kind of get the idea where this guy's coming from. So good to have you, Reuben.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Let's have a little bit of a 30,000-foot overview here from the political science and the community involvement thing, both local and international. An expert on fair trade in the form of Alan Joseph. He currently teaches poli-sci and sociology at Tallahassee Community College, a former vice president of the Fair Trade Federation, still an active member there. And you want to talk about fair trade? You talk to Alan. He's your guy. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
And we'll be cutting you loose a little bit early today, too. I hear you got a exam you got to give out at TCC, huh?
Yeah, students like to take their exam when they're prepared for it.
You think they're shaking in their shoes? Is it a toughie?
They'll be wondering if they're hearing me talking on the radio if I'm ready.
They're hoping you don't show up so they can go on. A cultural economy, the expert in that is Tony DeMaria, property manager of Railroad Square Art Park and lead coordinator of cultural events held in the park. 23 years of experience with both local and corporate retail business, owner of the Right On Studio in Railroad Square, and so much. That is such a busy place.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Tom. Thanks.
And, well, we'll be talking more about that interesting and unique little enclave of activity that is Railroad Square down there. And while we're thinking green, let's say hi to an old friend, Kim Ross. She's director of Rethink Energy Florida. And if you're familiar with that organization, educates, engages, and empowers folks to take action toward achieving energy independence. And you got something coming up this weekend, don't you, Kim?
I do. We've got the Green Shopping Holiday Extravaganza.
Ooh, what's that going to be all about?
Well, that's going to have a bunch of local vendors out to sell their goods, and we'll have organic wine tasting, we'll have face painting, we'll have a bunch of things that are for people who want to buy in an environmentally friendly way, and part of that is buying local.
Okay, and that's going to be at the All Saint Hop Yard, I think, on All Saints?
That's right, on Saturday at 3:30.
3:30, okay, going through until 6. That's become a real hotbed of cultural and other activity down there, hasn't it?
I love that area down there. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It really is cool. Let's start off with Joe Berg here. That whole shop local thing, how'd you get that going?
Meaning the weekend?
You had the weekend just pass. It was a shop local weekend. But how did you put that together and what actually occurred during it?
There were a lot of two businesses I could think of that had been around for 25 or 30 years that closed this year. And they were really sort of staples, that thing that you were talking about with a downtown, that, you know, like that vibrant local mom and pop shop. Realizing that, and that the economy is still tough, and that the economy might not jump into gear so quick because of sequestration and this fiscal cliff that's going on, we thought that there was a real imperative to try and direct more shopping to local businesses. So we declared a holiday weekend. We had a great panel with the mayor and commissioner, Chairman Maddox from the county, several commissioners, as well as a network that we sort of threw together real quick of district heads and different organizers in town, and we just got it out with the media. You guys were exceptional in helping us get that word out, and then also did a social media campaign and got some advertisements and pushed it that way. And we had some good feedback from folks that it drove some traffic to local businesses right when they needed it.
And we're starting to get an upsurge of local businesses in certain enclaves. We'll talk here, Tony, about what's going on with Railroad Square and that whole Gain Street redevelopment.
Right.
That's got a potential for a lot of things. But we got Midtown that's going on. There's a good possibility that when we get that entire Cascades Park corridor that wheels out to around Lake Munson, you could have other stuff popping up along that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well.
Right on.
So, I mean, there's hope for local business growth here in this area, perhaps more so than some other communities of comparable size. I want to get back to the food, though, and that's where you come in, Reuben. And when we talk about growing things local, when you have a gigantic domestic industry that provides us with our food, and it's through, you know, the big supermarket chains, the Winn-Dixies, the Publixes, all that kind of thing. Are you swimming against the tide when you're trying to grow your own stuff and market it locally?
No, I kind of feel it's an ebb and flow. You're kind of going with the tide of change in the way of being more conscientious about what it is you're eating and where you're buying it.
It's a little bit tough to market, though, I mean, because you're up against, you know, people drive by the big supermarkets all the time, and man, it's just so easy to go in, you know, and get whatever you need, broccoli and stuff. But you guys, you know, don't have quite that visibility where people can pop in and get stuff.
It's a niche market. I think all niche markets, you're going to have a specific way of finding your customer, and we do it through you know, the local farmers markets. We have direct sales through the restaurants in our community, and, you know, direct sales to families.
Mm-hmm. But there's enough going to keep you and the folks alive there who are, you know, involved in your operation.
Yeah, and if anything, we've seen more farms pop up, more local growers pop up in a very diverse way, from cheese to produce to meat. You know.
Yeah, that seems to be a growing type of thing. Alan, as far as the big picture on this, when you buy local instead of buying through a big box store or a major supermarket or any of this other stuff, what does it really do for a community?
Well, the old phrase, think globally, act locally, has never been more true than in our current economy. I think people are pretty familiar with the idea that we have a race to the bottom going on internationally. We are literally competing with people who make extremely little money, And the idea is to set up standards globally. So as we set up higher standards on everything we import, we're actually supporting local businesses and local economies because you are trying to keep the wage level up. You will have – with fair trade, you will have some reduction of overall importing. There is a little bit of an interest in moving towards what would be called a standard-based trade system in which everything that's imported has certain basic standards for wage levels and environmental conditions and such. So there are a lot of things that are potential. And at some point, that connection, understanding that how we support ourselves and our economy locally does have a global connection. There are a few fair trade stores in the area. You have a full-time fair trade store at 10,000 villages. But then there's a lot of local businesses that have fair trade too. You have two basic types of items. You have commodities like coffees, which are very important. They're important in saving the rainforest around the world. And then you have crafts that are made. So many stores do import things that are local shops. The goal locally, I think, is to try to combine as many positive aspects as you can. Try to find organic and locally made, of course. But mostly you want to try to find good conditions. And there's quite a variety. And probably the people who are speaking here today can give you more detail on which things to look for.
Well, that's exactly why I thought, Tony, if we could check out you with the, you know, Railroad Square Art Park.
Right.
You know, comparing and contrasting that to a typical large retailer, it's like night and day. They are two totally separate animals, aren't they?
Totally different. And some of the main differences are the sense of community when you do go to shop or, for example, like on First Friday, we have between 4,000 to 7,000 people show up. They get a chance to shop. Some of our local businesses, they get a chance to mingle with friends, eat at the food trucks, listen to local bands. And you really get a sense that there is definitely a large demand that's not being met for arts and culture here in Tallahassee. And I think that with all the construction, like you were talking about with Cascades Park, the FAMU extension, within the next 2 years, we should be able to meet those needs. And I think Tallahassee is going to have a lot of offerings in terms of arts and culture.
Yeah, I'm thinking of an area analogous to that, you know, the Five Points area, say, in Columbia, South Carolina, also a university town. All kinds of shops and bistros and coffee houses and entertainment venues right there in that in section. And it's just like a great little downtown on its own. We're talking about shopping local here today on Perspectives. Your input always welcome, 414-1234, 800-926-8809, and we'll be right back. Was that while we're thinking global, we can shop local? I think that that's if we can kind of turn that phrase around. That's what we're talking about here on Perspectives with a great panel of Alan Joseph and Joe Berg and Ruben Fields and Tony DeMaria and Kim Ross here with us in 414-1234. The number, if you'd like to weigh on, if you are say an entrepreneur, if you are a small business owner and you have a little retail store or a shop or some other enterprise that you'd like to kind of weigh in on how you run that and what makes it successful and why people maybe should opt to do business with you rather than one of these humongous intergalactic chain stores that usually kind of pops first nowadays to mind when you're thinking of shopping. And I want to go around. Why is that? Why have we defaulted now away from, you know, Ma and Pa's little store on the corner to the gigantic store out in the mall or on the edge of town with the humongous 85-acre parking lot? You know, why is that now? Is it just purely price point? We just think, oh, all the bargains, all the cheap stuff. Kim, what?
Well, there's a price point aspect, but I think – there's also the, oh, we can go there and I can get my milk and I can get my kid a toy and my kid will be entertained, frankly, by going and playing on the little video games that they have there and, you know, that sort of thing that I can get clothes, socks for my kid all at the same time. I do think, though, and I think Ruben might have been getting to this earlier, that it's starting to trend back the other way, that people are realizing, wow, we're at this point where this we've gotten society almost that too big to fail. You know, that this idea that if we keep putting our money going for the lowest price point and putting our money into these large corporations that do take care of some of us in town, but certainly don't build that resilience of our economy here in Tallahassee, then we're doing ourselves harm in the long run. I see a lot more people out on local Saturdays, and I hear that in the conversations now. Wow, where can I go and shop local? What restaurant can I go to? What business can I go to buy things locally?
Let's hear what Michael has to say. He's given us a call here on Perspectives. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, we're doing good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to all those brothers and sisters out there that are doing this and participating in this type of business and you know, going local. And I just kind of like to throw something out because I teach locally here at a college and at Flagler College, and we talk often about, you know, in the social education class, and we talk often about, you know, the breakdown of the agrarian society, you know, late 1900s into the early 20th century, and where our society went, basically, in terms of, you know, being so bifurcated and dispersed, and the whole fast food movement of the 20th century, and now with the things that they are doing, that this is more important than necessarily just commerce and food and the products. This is about slowing down and thinking about where our society is going. And that's, to me, a much larger picture. And I just wanted to have them comment on that if they ever think that they're actually part of maybe something more important to our society than just the commerce that they're purveying, so to speak.
Oh, okay, Michael. Well,
I'll take my question off the air.
Terrific. Okay, well, we have a fellow professor in the persona of Alan Joseph there. It sounds like something up your alley there, sort of a sociological type of thing. What does this mean really for society as a whole, Alan, when you have people rethinking now instead of, you know, defaulting to the major chain stores, thinking more in terms of, I know Joe's got a store that maybe has what I'm looking for. Let me check with him first.
Well, first off, I appreciate the historical aspect that was brought in, because we have to think of our lives in that way. We are parts of processes that occur. And I think what's happened with chain stores and restaurants in many ways is that they've become familiar because we see their imagery on TV. They're the same in every community. It doesn't matter if you're traveling across state, even across the world, and you become familiar with these as if they were local, when in fact they're not. And I think that that's an important thing to remember, is that in a way we may be kind of tricked into feeling that's comfortable and common and we know what it is. And so every time we go to that same store or restaurant, it's the same.
So that consistency then, which I know Ray Kroc, when he came up with the whole concept of McDonald's, that was a local restaurant. It started as one and then became this, you know, giant corporation. But the consistency that you could either go to New York City, Tallahassee, Florida, or Mumbai and go into a McDonald's and it'd be just the same.
And I think what you want to begin to look for is what's unique. And I like the phrase, keep it sassy, Tallahassee. I thought that was very clever, because I think that's what it is. We should try to find unique foods and things that make our lives more interesting.
Okay, back to you, Reuben Fields. What makes the produce and the foodstuffs that you come up with different from what you might find at the typical big supermarket?
Well, there's a few different types of agriculture. You know, your industrialized model, very large mechanized machines. And then there's the smaller farm where, you know, you're going to have individuals participating with the food, hands-on activities. and then there's a soil understanding. You have to kind of start with the soil, have healthy plants, have healthy animals/people. So I think one of the differences between agricultural models is putting soil first. I think a lot of small farmers kind of have a conscientious attitude about, you know, the growth processes and, you know, the soil food web, to coin the life of the soil, is very important to the life of the plant, to the life of the people. So I think that's one of the differences between a small farm model or organic, if you will, and a large industrialized kind of chemical process.
Okay, so in that context, then the soil is not just a medium to hold the fertilizer and the other chemical substances that would grow the plants in a large commercial farm. This is more what you put into the soil is what you get back into the food.
Absolutely. So it's a live process. The soil is alive.
So this is better food nutritionally and ecologically and all that stuff?
There's a small debate going on right now about the nutritional aspects of organic or conventionally raised produce. I'm gonna say that if you have a healthy soil that's full of all the constituents to make a healthy plant versus a soil or dirt that is kind of processed to give the plant what we think that it needs, there's a difference there.
Okay, just like what we do with when we're raising chickens and other livestock where, it can be either a more normal part of the animal's natural lifestyle or it can be put into a very synthetic situation which may or may not be the best, not just for the animal but for what comes out of it in terms of the quality of the meat and all that.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Kim.
Just a piece to add on that. I heard somebody speaking recently at the urban farm discussion that was going on, and one thing that they pointed out is that a lot of the produce, not all of it, but a lot of the produce that we find in our supermarkets is actually built to be shipped. So by the time you're buying it at the supermarket, it's 3 weeks old usually, and that's what's fresh. So compare that to something that you get from a farmer nearby. A lot of people don't know the taste difference. It's just a taste difference, not to mention the possibilities of the nutritional differences. But the taste difference of being able to buy something, take it off the plant and just chew right into it. I've had the experience of watching children do that recently with the Salvation Army Garden folks, and it was neat to watch them just bite into a pepper. You would normally not think, oh, I'm going to eat a raw pepper, and that children would eat a raw pepper. But, man, we were eating a lot of vegetables that day.
Yeah, and snap beans right out of the garden. You can't beat them. Oh, man, it's, better than a Dunkin' Donut. It's incredible. Sue's on line one. Hey, Sue, welcome to Perspectives.
Hello. Yes, hi.
Hi.
I had a question about fair exchange. I've done some study, and I've read comparisons of fair trade. And there's another organization called Equal Exchange that, to my knowledge, treats local worldwide farmers better. I understand that fair trade started out true to principles, but then they kind of took in plantations where workers aren't really treated as fairly. Do you have any comments on that from your perspective?
Yeah, let's check around the table, Sue, and see what we have. Anyone know anything about that, Alan?
Yeah, Equal Exchange actually is a fair trade organization. And I think what you might be referring to with commodity production, this is coffees and such, there have been a number of new fair trade certifying organizations that have come into place. And within people who work with fair trade, there is some debate about who has the highest standards. From my experience, generally, I still support all the organizations doing it. No doubt about it, so many people are trying to do fair trade work right now that there's going to be some people questioning which groups are the best, but from what I can see, there are decent standards among all the groups that are involved.
Mm-hmm. And for purposes of definition, Alan, what exactly is fair trade? What does that mean?
With fair trade, you try to have a decent wage in the local context. You might call it a living wage in the local context. That's important. And you also try to support artisans. You actually try to basically support local production in those areas. And so with crafts, for example, we can actually tell you exactly who made what and how they made it, that they've gone back to using organic dyes. There's no lead in the production process. And you're concerned with the health and safety of the people who are doing the work. And so fair trade is trying to basically take our standards that we would have here and apply them to everything that's imported. And in doing so, that does increase the cost somewhat of imported goods, but you're also increasing wages, you're helping them create a local economy. So you're almost helping to create a local movement in other countries.
Oh, it's the same way we're talking here about creating a local movement in our country, domestically, right here. Joe Berg, how does a dollar spent at a local business kind of have a different path than a dollar that is spent in a large chain store?
Right. This also goes back to the first caller, Michael's question about sort of the long-term investment in community and that larger picture. The standard statistic, although there's different reports that use different criteria, is that for every dollar spent at a locally owned independent business, 68 cents of that dollar is recycled back into the community. Think wages, taxes, take-home pay, investment in. Because there are fewer steps ultimately between the business owner, operator, and the customer. And those steps are mostly in town. So it stays here as opposed to an investor in a foreign place who, you know, therefore wants the purpose of the organization to be purely to make money. There are different statistics on how much stays in when you spend with a chain, and those are both regional and by sector. But I've heard as low as 14 cents up to 28 cents. So we're talking 2 to 3 times as much money stays locally. And my take on that would be the comparing renting a home versus buying a home. It's an investing versus spending approach. So when you're spending locally, you are investing. You get 2 to 3 times as much benefit from that dollar that you spent. So is it really beneficial to save 10 or 15 cents to go to a big box store that has price points that can't be beaten because of their buying power and because it's not fair how they're exchanging with other countries and the manufacturers? Is that really more beneficial to you if it's causing, one, the erosion of the community that you live in? I say put your money where your house is.
Okay, so it would be just like I'm thinking Tony DiMaria. If someone went and spent a dollar with say the guys at Bally High Trading Company,
right.
They would then go out and they would take that dollar and they would buy things within the community to support their business, and so it gets recycled
definitely
right here rather than being shipped off to a corporate headquarters somewhere.
Exactly. And we see a lot of that within the square, even within the merchants helping other merchants, you know, purchasing within the communities.
Okay, and which is the whole idea then of getting back to that entire, if not self-sustaining, more self-sustaining community that doesn't depend so much on external economic intervention to keep on going.
Right. Yeah, I would agree.
You might think of it as a local multiplier effect because you are keeping it more locally and it's just spreading more quickly through your community.
Hmm. Yeah, which was the original, I thought, concept of community. Yeah, when people started coming together, in the eons before, because everything was so spread out, there was no instant communication or interaction with other places or people, so you kind of had to do it all yourself. So, Ruben, you'd be growing all the food, and Tony, your guys would be supplying all the artistic stuff, presumably drawing on the inside of caves,
right,
or something, which would be kind of cool. I don't know how you would take that home with you. I guess you'd have to chisel it out. But, and then Kim also making sure that whatever economic activity you were engaged in did not destroy the community around it, because otherwise you couldn't live there anymore, right?
Well, that's right. And also just the idea of buying locally sourced items in particular, but even buying fair trade items, both of those have a much greater long-term positive impact than buying unfairly traded, as you said, items, and then buying things that have been shipped from so many different areas. When you're talking about reducing fossil fuel consumption, you're talking about trying to build the resilience of Tallahassee, and you're talking about trying to buy local just to reduce that consumption of fossil fuel that's built into the transportation.
Another call on the line. Let's see how we're doing for time. Yeah, we're good. David, hi. Welcome to Perspectives.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
We're going good. Thank you, David.
Yeah. Al, what's up, man?
Hi, Dave.
Okay. fair trade and all the things you're talking about are near and dear to my heart. I've spent decades with Alan Joseph, watching him attempt to put into practice all that he preaches. He doesn't only talk the talk, he walks the walk and has made every effort for the nearly 3 decades I've known him for to bring about economic development by the fairest methods possible. And I've watched him invest everything he's got into setting up such a system as we are talking about, a fair trade system, goods which are fairly produced, where the workers are paid properly, the materials are non-poisonous, and you know everything is done to give these people a living wage. That has been something wonderful to behold. I will say it is very difficult to compete with Ross and TJ Maxx and those places which get items produced. They're so cheap, they're so inexpensive in relation to the price that you'd have to pay for a fairly made good. It is a wonderful idea. Can't help but hope that this will come about where people realize the importance of what the panel is discussing this morning. I do think it's going to be kind of hard to change people's habits and get them to even think about these very important issues.
Well, David, with the kind of points that you brought up, however, and the fact that there seems to be some, if not emerging, consciousness. Boy, does that sound like a 60s term, huh? But a growing awareness of the fact that there is a great deal of mutual benefit to be derived from shopping local and focusing more on the local community and building that as opposed to just going for the best price on a particular item. Maybe that... That will start to occur and in a more natural fashion. We'll find out. Perspectives talking about not only fair trade, but shopping local. We'll be right back. Before you head to the mall or the big box store, whatever, check and see what is available locally. You may find something much more interesting than just that cookie cutter stamped out piece of stuff that you could get literally anywhere. The most fun thing about any community is, as they say, shopping and, to Reuben, eating where the locals eat, because they know where the good stuff is. And we're talking to some good stuff people here today on Perspectives. Alan Joseph, we had a guy by the name of David who called us just before the break, and he seemed to be very much acquainted with you. What's the connection there, huh?
Well, you have to trust me. I didn't pay him to call in and say all those kind words. It was awfully nice of him to say that. I met David many years ago at American University. We were both studying economic development, and that's why I first got interested in fair trade. So we've known each other for quite some time, more than 20 years. And he himself does good work in this community, and he understands. He's from Guyana, South America, and it's a very poor country, and he understands the conditions that people live in and what a difference it could make if people in this country put standards into what they imported.
And did we see, before we cut you loose here, we know you got an exam over TCC to give to those eagerly anticipating students of yours there. Please let him not show. I can hear it. Just hear it right now. But do you think we're starting to turn the corner on this, moving away from the large cookie cutter sameness of American retail, just in bits and pieces and moving back towards a more community-based sort of commerce?
We need a second wave of awareness. There has been some awareness of imported goods, but everything's been done through bilateral trade agreements. And what we need to do is just have standards that everything that's imported – has certain minimum wage standards, like maybe even a dollar an hour. And believe me, companies like Walmart know exactly what people are making who are producing the goods. They have the technology that they keep track of everything. And we can make this difference happen. If there is anybody who would like to work on standard-based trade, they're welcome to contact me about that. And it's something that we know what to do, and we know how much it can help protect us here at home.
Alan Joseph, thank you so much for your insights and for sharing all that today. It's been really enlightening for me, and we appreciate you being on Perspectives, and we'll cut you loose and let you go do that exam with your guys.
Thank you, and also to the panel.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
Okay. Folks, let's go to the next call here. I see Kristen is queued up there on line one. Hi, Kristen. Thanks for calling Perspectives.
Thank you for having me. I just want to thank all the panelists for coming in today and the good work they're doing for our community.
Well, I see smiles all around the table, Kristen. I think you hit a note there. What was your question?
Well, I'm an employee at New Leaf Market, and we're locally owned business. And what I've seen over the years is that the local businesses have been putting all of their energy to work with each other. Locally owned Tallahassee has done great work. It seems like what we need now is more support from the city and county. So my question to the panelists is, if they had, you know, if they had one thing they could ask for, what would it be in terms of assistance to help the local businesses take it to the next level?
Well, okay, Kristen, before we pose that to the rest of the panel, I think, if I am not mistaken, Ruben, you got something to say to the guys at New Leaf Market there, because they really draw an awful lot of attention of the public to what goes on in the local agricultural community, which is also local, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, they play a pretty strong role in supporting our local and regional food community, for sure.
Yeah, they had that tour of the farms not too long ago, and your family's farm was on it,
Turkey Hill was honored to be on it, absolutely.
Yeah, that is so cool. It's not all the big, giant, commercial, corporate farms now. We're seeing more and more of the small ones come. Back to Kristen's question there. What can a local government do to help this out? Just throw out subsidies or what? Joe Burke, what?
Well, there are a couple of paths to answer that question, but first I just want to say that New Leaf Market is also just a great leader on this subject. We also have a pledge drive that's going on right now. If you sign this online pledge to spend 20% of your holiday shopping with local small businesses, we have these great prizes, one of which is a $100 cooking basket from New Leaf Market. I just wanted to say that that's out there, and please help us spread the word. For a locally owned perspective, we are discussing putting together a town hall meeting in the end of January, perhaps early February, with local leaders and local business owners to hear what the community has to say and to get a dialogue going there. Nothing is set on that yet, and we're just putting that out there as this is where we'd like to go next. In terms of subsidies, this ties into, I think, the whole conversation and back to living wages. A lot of times when a big box retailer comes in and will get, it doesn't have to pay any property taxes for 10 years and such, and it's supposed to bring in all these jobs. There are studies that say, for instance, at a big retailer that starts with a W, and I'm not going to give it any free advertising by saying its name, that for every three jobs it creates, it actually harms or kills two others. The average hourly wage across the nation for this big box retailer is $8.81 an hour, which puts that average employee at just under 70% of the federal poverty line. And a study was done in 2004 that found that for every location this store has, the employees are receiving $420,000 worth of food stamps or government assistance because the living wage in this race to the bottom. So really, local governments end up subsidizing a subsidy that subsidizes a subsidy. And I think Kim could speak to that also, that if you included all the subsidies we give to big oil companies, the price of gas would be near $5. But people can't really appreciate the actual cost because it's being spread out like peas on the plate that the kid doesn't want to eat. So I would like to have a dialogue and see where we can go with that. Mayor John Marks has been a great leader on this. He started the Local Business Saturdays 2 years ago. His wife has been a great ambassador and carried on the tradition of going out and shopping. We'd like to see where we can go with that. And I think that we really do need to evaluate what subsidies we're giving to major retailers, what we're actually getting back, and what local small businesses might need. And that might be more incentive in terms of merchant districts. But when you look at it, a local small retailer is paying property tax and every tax down the line. They get absolutely no subsidy. And then they're also being taxed because they have to help pay for the food stamps for the employee at that big box store that they don't even shop at.
Yeah, I know there was a merchant here in town, still has a very vibrant and well-respected operation, who was bending over backwards trying to come up with a halfway affordable health care plan for her employees. And she only had, I think, five or six folks. And it was agonizing to see what she was going through. She could not find an affordable plan, and this was something that she had promised herself that she was going to do, and found that there was no way to do it, beyond driving herself essentially out of business.
Right. It had just it become so onerous right there. And you think of how many other businesses are in – smaller businesses, locally owned businesses are in that same boat that, man, they want to do everything for their folks, you know, unlike some of the large chains. And yet they aren't able to because of the economies of scale or lack thereof.
And you know what a local business owner takes home at the end of the month is what's left after all the bills are left. And if you have a break-even month, you may be very well in trouble on your personal finances. Similar to that story, right after the collapse of the market, I know of one retailer that is up in around Lake Ella. I don't want to get anybody in blushing or don't want me to mention their name, but provides full health benefits for their employees. And after the market tank, took on a second job so that you didn't have to lay anyone off. That's a commitment to community, and that's because one, it's a great person and someone who's highly invested in the community, but also because you know you are directly connected to your employees and your customers. You appreciate them. You know, similar, I think, to Ruben, the steps from the table, from the farm to the table. You appreciate that tomato because you know who grew it, you know who brought it to you, you know who prepared it.
Yeah, no escaping your employees and no escaping your customers. Everyone's right. You talk about accountability, huh? Let's talk to Tan here on line two. Hi, Tan. Thanks for calling Perspectives.
Yes, thank you for a fine show as usual. I am saying this as a Walmart stockholder, but I am a believer in shopping locally. But right now, I will never buy another thing at Walmart until they offer proof that they have corrected the working conditions of the people who make their clothes.
All right, Tim.
That fire in Bangladesh is inexcusable.
Yes.
And they knew it, and they have the money that they can afford to have on the scene inspectors, and none of this passing the buck. Well, we had a subcontractor, and the subcontractor had a subcontractor for the inspector. That's baloney.
Tan, that's a wonderful observation, and thanks for sharing that information. We've been following that on the news with a great deal of concern, certainly, where any kind of a – well, you know, Ruben, you couldn't do that. You couldn't pawn it off and say, oh, that was the contractor. You know, they're the ones who screwed up. It wasn't me. I didn't poison that food. I mean, it is your baby. You're right there, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So – but this happens of – did anyone see the PBS special?
Well, and we're responsible for the community that we live in. So I think when you talk about large businesses that you know, transplant themselves into a community, well, they're not really, you know, vested in it. They're there to take away from the resources of the community to further their corporate initiatives. You know, I think it's okay, but you really need to sustain that community so you can keep milking it, I guess, you know, but you need to give back to it so it remains in a healthy place so you can afford to, yeah.
Yeah, and you're part of it. Again, there's no escape there. So you've got that ultimate accountability. You're not, you know, distanced from the town by hundreds or even thousands of miles. You live there. People are going to find you. That kind of helps to keep everything on the up and up. And I keep thinking that when it comes to over at what goes on at Railroad Square when you have all of those different events. You know, people, Tony, keep coming back again and again and again to the places that they find that have the kind of – whether it's crafts or
exactly.
You know, artworks or anything. And they develop a relationship with, in this case, not just the vendor but in many instances the creator of that.
Yeah, exactly. And also I think a lot of what helps the local businesses here are the events that we surround our local businesses with, like the First Friday events, like the Gaines Street Festival, that type of thing, where it's not just running into a W-type store and grabbing some toilet paper, but you're actually going somewhere to an event to have fun, you know, to meet people, to experience your community. And that's the real reward I see, you know, locally for us to, you know, to – shop, you know, with businesses here.
Well, while we're talking about events, again, Kim, if we could give another plug here to the Green Shopping Holiday Extravaganza you got coming up.
Absolutely. It's going to be this Saturday from 3:30 to 6:30 at the All Saints Hop Yard. That's 453 All Saints. It is near the Railroad Square district, and there will be some shops open in Railroad Square as well.
Definitely.
So we encourage people to go to both to do their holiday shopping. We're going to be having organic wine tasting, served, by the way, this is for Kristen, by the commissioners. So by a couple of commissioners and by somebody from the Soil and Water Conservation District. So if you do want to express, you know, have a chat with one of the commissioners, hopefully a friendly chat over some wine, then they'll be helping us out with that. And we've got face paint. We've got all sorts of local vendors that are selling a variety of gifts and things that we can do. And, yes, it is absolutely a fun event. We've just posted a little Facebook picture that shows the comparison of a Black Friday mob, you know, going into one of these big box stores with a nice glass of wine, sipping, you know, the peaceful feeling that this event is designed to get. We'll have the Hot Tamale band there as well as a couple of other bands. And, you know, it's just going to be a fun event where you get to know the people who are selling you the goods that you're buying.
No, I keep wondering if when Mary Ann Lindley ran for Tallahassee City Commissioner, if she knew she was going to wind up being a bartender.
You are right. Commissioner Lindley is one of the ones that is going to be serving. So I don't think she knew that, but she's looking forward to it, as are Commissioner Dozier and Commissioner Miller.
Reuben Fields, to talk about me, do you have some events that are coming up in conjunction with your operation? You could.
Well, we just had our first year anniversary on November 18th, so a few of our events just passed. And I think every Friday or every night at the Root Cellar is an event where we get to celebrate our food, our community, and, you know, people grow it, cook it, serve it. Here we are.
Well, for those folks who have never been, what are some of the menu specials?
Well, we have a braised short rib from Orchard Pond Organics. Let's see. There's a sausage and shrimp over organic polenta. Last night's special was a Gulf flounder. You know, with a local vegetable stir fry, we try to resource local first, and then we go regional, and we do make concession. We find a good product to go nationally and globally, but also being conscientious about those purchases.
Okay, and where are you guys located, again, for folks who don't know where you are?
We're on the corner of Miccosukee and Magnolia. It's called Magnolia Crossings. Our parking lot is in the rear of the building opposite Miccosukee Road, but our business faces Miccosukee Road.
Yeah, because I've heard from so many folks who are regulars at your place and just, you know, rave about, you know, God, everything is so fresh and so flavorful and so unique. It's not the kind of menu that you can find certainly at any chain restaurant or even, you know, some other local restaurants. And you guys really do grow and produce local.
Yeah.
And that's what you –
Well, you can't standardize a menu when you fluctuate with the season. Changes. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another natural kind of thing where you're not forcing the food to do what it does not want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since that diversity also with local businesses, let's say like a bookstore, Borders, for example, which due to decisions made elsewhere ends up closing and we lose something of a great, you know, meeting place in the community. But, you know, what they're going to have is going to be based on national and regional sales plans, and it's a lot more of everything that isn't as localized. They'll know what sells here and what doesn't and what they should do more of. But a local bookshop like the Paperback Rack, for example, will know what Tallahassee wants. We'll be able to offer much more diversity in product line. And then a lot of these local businesses also, this leads into the development of local culture and whether or not Tallahassee wants to be recognized as sort of an anywhere USA, sort of like a suburban area that has a lack of its own identity, because Paperback Rack holds concerts once or twice a month. Miccosukee Root Cellar also has bands and music, Railroad Square Art Park, and all of these local businesses also give a lot more back in terms of to charity. They're directly connected to it. And I think, Kim, you were saying that, you know, when you go in, most people say yes, and when you go into a chain, they give you an 800 number.
That's right. It's just that community feel that when we've asked for donations for a silent auction and that sort of thing, we have invariably had had the local businesses say yes unless they were truly struggling. And then we've had a lot of big boxes say no, or give it, here's the 800 number, call them. So there's that connection that gets built in the local community that you don't see by going into a mall.
And by extension, I keep coming back to mentally to some of the things that you guys are saying about how building this interdependence and this accountability and this face-to-face connection between people can only be a good thing because we are so split apart on so many levels today. This is where it begins, pulling it all back together.
I think that's probably part of why the ship is turning. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I think that everyone knows that there's something a little bit off. We're all a little distant, and there's too much digital or something in between us that it comes back to, you know, let's stand together.
Joe Berg, Kim Ross, Tony DiMaria, Ruben Fields, and thanks again to Alan Joseph, who was with us earlier, Shopping Local, and let's all keep that in mind. Guys, thanks for coming
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox on the board today, Lydell Rawls on the phones and emails, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, heading into the holidays, we're going to talk religion. That's all coming up next week right here in Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.